Hey guys, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Overcomers. I wanted to invite you here. I wanted to extend an invitation for you to join me and several others at the Acts 29 conference this coming October in Dallas. So Acts 29 is a church planting organization. We plant churches all over the world, and we've got our conference coming in this October in Dallas. I'll be speaking alongside a great lineup of preachers that you don't want to miss. J.D. Greer will be there, Joby Martin, Steve Bang Lee, and more. The Acts 29 conference, really what our heart is we want to equip and encourage church planners, pastors, and leaders to be faithful leaders in today's rapidly changing culture. We'll be talking about how the gospel provides better answers than the culture to some of the hot topics of our day, including gender, sexuality, power, and more. I would love to see you there. If you want to register, you can go to acts29.com/conference. If you're an Overcomers listener, you're going to receive $20 off registration. You just have to use the code Overcomers in all caps anytime before October 1st. That's acts29.com/conference. Join us there. Eager to see you. I have watched the silent killer of pornography disrupt men and women and marriages and home lives. And it's why I love partnering with Covenant Eyes. They're not just a partner in this podcast. I personally use them as a shield against the nonsense of our day. And they have generously offered 30 days free to use this technology as a shield against the onslaught of pornography in our lives. You can get this 30 days for free by going to covenanteyes.com/overcomers. I pray that you would seriously take advantage of this opportunity. Hey, welcome to this episode of The Overcomers. Today's is a little bit different than maybe other episodes. I wanted to get with a couple of my good friends and fellow elders at The Village Church, Mason King and Nick Crawford, and we're just going to talk about plurality or eldership or church governance, how the church should be organized. And so let me tell you why I think this matters. I was hired by Highland Village First Baptist Church 23 years ago. It was a church of about 160. It was like a Willow Creek model church that had a leadership team and a deacon board. There weren't real clear lines on who was responsible for what, be it theological or directional kind of vision. And when I came, I had been preaching at a really large kind of ecumenical gathering in town, and almost immediately we exploded. And so we went from 168 to 1,000 in the first year, and then for the next decade, grew by 1,000 every year. And one of the things I could feel happening in those early years is that in that system, I had almost all the power. I could make almost all the decisions by myself. I could create, you know, I could discern from the Lord the direction and go without any real checks and balances. And I liked that, and it scared me. I had been reading around church governance or plurality. I'd read Strock's book on eldership and a couple other books on elders. I knew that the New Testament spoke to plurality for the sake of the church and for my own sake, for my own safety, and so began to try to move the village towards elder governance. And by the grace of God, because of fast growth, there wasn't a lot of conflict moving us from that leadership team, deacon board confusion into what now is an elder-governed church at the TBC. And so Mason and Nick are both staff elders. We do a plus one majority on our elder board, which simply means that there's always plus one lay elder to paid elder kind of in our configuration. And so we've been doing that for as long as I can remember. And so Mason, Nick, welcome to the Overcomers Podcast, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, no, glad you guys are here. Why don't we talk a little bit about key texts, where in the New Testament we're getting this idea that one guy's not supposed to be king. Jesus is meant to be king, and then under Jesus are the overseers of a church. Can we talk biblically about that real quick?
I think you see a lot of just Paul talking to the churches by example.
Yeah.
And so he's saying, I'm writing the elders among you. When the elders are here, gather for prayer. So you can see kind of as they're commissioning churches, they're commissioning elders. You see that in Acts. You see it in 1 Peter 5. I would also think of in each of the epistles as he's writing his letters. He's saying, I'm writing to these plural overseers.
Yeah.
And so there's an assumption in the text where you're just seeing like, this is the structure of the New Testament church.
Yeah.
And if you're creating an argument from, hey, here's the biblical example of you're working through it, I'm looking at it going, that's just the pattern he was following.
Yeah. And then I think even as he's coaching Timothy, the church planner, what does he say? Like, find elders, establish elders, get elders involved here. Don't do this all by yourself. Yeah. Like, get them involved. I think same thing's going on in Titus. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
That's totally the pattern. I mean, you see the tearful goodbye to the elders at Ephesus. I mean, he went to the elders through tears and trials. They're weeping together. I mean, I got this picture of him at the docks, like bidding farewell through tears. But he's going to the men that he labored with, and it's a plural model. I mean, but taking it back really to the beginning, it's the Godhead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you take it back from New Testament to the Old. It's like before the foundations of the earth, there was three in one existing perfectly. And collaborative harmony.
Yeah.
So it's the three and the one. Maybe page two, depending on how long your introduction is, you pick it up. There was one thing that wasn't good. Now you see the first 6 days, and then we got blue skies, we got green grass, we got beasts of the field, we got birds of the sky. Man, God is doing good things. And you see this repetitive refrain of, it was good. It was good. It was good. Then the Sabbath comes where he says, I'm going to take a rest. But the rest was unique. He didn't just take a nap or sit on his hands. He used the Sabbath to reflect on all the good that he has done. And that's when you see the first thing in the scriptures that was out of whack. One thing was kind of out of sorts. It was not good that the man would be alone. So he fashioned a suitable helper, one fit for man. And so right from the jump, you see plural leadership, a complementary leadership structure in the Godhead. Imaged by man and his wife. You race through, it gets kind of bad. And kings and judges are doing kind of what's right in their own eyes. It gets kind of crazy. And then you get to Jesus, who also models this. Obviously, he was the only one that could go to the cross and stay there by himself. But he, from the jump of his own ministry, he's catching guys.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he goes and he's going to breathe into them and multiply the church. So you see it really from beginning to end. Like kind of a plural model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I even thought of Moses, where Jethro has to come down and go, hey, what you're doing is not good.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to die here. You need to, and then boom, now we've got other elders involved. We've got other.
Wear yourself out.
It really is Genesis to Revelation, a pretty consistent theme. What are some of the reasons you think guys tend to stay away from plurality?
I mean, hubris. Can be one.
Yeah.
It's faster.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, like,
plurality so slows it down.
So our plural model, I mean, kind of the back edge to that is like, it kind of takes time to get things done. I mean, how many layers do we have to go through to get a decision done?
Yeah.
That can be frustrating. So guys that want to go fast and furious, and we can be in that mold. Boy, it really slows down. It can kind of grind to a halt when you got to loop people in and loop another room in and kind of it can be slow as molasses at sometimes. So I think maybe some hubris, you aspire to be the king.
Yeah.
That's biblical. That went pretty poorly
for everyone.
but also I think maybe there's a pragmatic side to it, which can be decision making can grind to a halt when the more people that are in the room, the more dynamics that are present.
I think also if you take the other side of pride and call the insecurity.
Yeah.
So if the leader's like, I don't know who I can trust.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have the relationships that will speak honestly to me. It's quicker, faster if I do it by myself.
Yeah.
And they're not aware of their shadow.
Yeah.
And so it can lean itself to pragmatism and it can be pride. And I think it can also be like, I don't have to face myself
yeah.
if I'm just talking to me.
Yeah.
And I think they might not be aware of that, but I think it's part and parcel of it, of why you would avoid that, because the plurality brings an accountability and a slowness to it. But I mean, Proverbs is saying there's wisdom in a multiplicity or a plethora of counselors.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't counsel yourself on that.
Yeah.
And I think that's one way that people might avoid stepping into it.
Yeah. And I think I've personally experienced every one of those in different seasons. Mm. Like I've got vivid memories of feeling like I was stuck in a loop in an elder meeting that wouldn't end. and I mean, for good reason. I mean, we were trying to work out the implications of our theology in our organization. If you have theology, philosophy, practice,
yeah.
we were trying to nail those three down, and every guy's coming from a different vantage point. The scriptures are pressing on mm-hmm. their experiences. All of that's going on in the room. And it would feel like, you know, it's 10:30 at night. This meeting was supposed to get over 30 minutes ago and we're not close.
Yeah.
And in situations like that, I can feel myself going, dang it. If we wouldn't have built this way, this could be done.
Mm-hmm.
But then I know that the product at the end of that in regards to theological conviction, philosophical implementation and practical, this is how this is going to work here,
yeah.
is exponentially better than had we not been stuck in that room for the sake of the body and the sake of the outworking of that. And then I'm a convictional guy. I almost always think I'm right. I do. I'm not arguing because I think I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I'm pressing into initiatives because I think I'm right. And there's a level of submission to God and the text
mm-hmm.
that's required of me to lose a vote.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways, if you think you have plurality, but you've never lost a vote, you don't have plurality. Now, I will say every vote I've ever lost, I've thought in my head and my heart, it's a not yet more than it's a no.
Yeah.
So I just go back to praying. And like I said, I'm convictional.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're arguing, I think the Lord wants this.
Yeah.
But if the Lord won't win the room, that's a break for me. I begin to learn, like, this is how the Lord's going to help my timing, because I don't have good timing. I want to do everything now. I'd kill us if it weren't for plurality, man. I'd just be like, we need to. This is important, and everything would be important, and we would all drown. And so for me, it's been such a gift for the Lord to go, no, not yet. Not yet. We're not ready yet. There are other things that have to happen. So I've experienced the hubris of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've experienced the pace of it. I've experienced really not knowing my own shadow and bent and trying to interact with a room where I'm maybe taking offense at things that don't have anything to do with me.
I've done that. Yeah.
And so it's funny that I agree with, yeah, those are the reasons why. And then having experienced, you know, personally experienced those reasons why, as we've tried to build this over the years.
Yeah.
And so what do you think? So those are kind of these are reasons we tend to not, like, what are some of the benefits of that we've experienced, right? So here we are, we've been at this years. Yeah. Mason, you've been with me for 15 this year.
Yeah.
And the Knicks, the new kid on the block,
right.
But came in strong. And through some crisis. And so in our time together, good times and bad, what are some of the gifts of plurality that you would say this is both, I think, biblical and I think this is what we've experienced.
We can spend the next hour talking about
yeah.
all the goodness we've experienced
yeah.
in the gift of plurality. I think part of the slowness it forces in decision-making is kind of gathering perspective and then letting wisdom surface.
Yeah.
Instead of coming in with your first blush and going, this is how it has to be. It's, no, the brothers are going to sit. We're going to pray. We're going to take some time. We're going to see if we have consolation between us around it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see what the Spirit wants to do.
Yeah.
Even in that, I think the fact that you were saying earlier about losing votes, one of the things I've noticed in our room over the years is just how you steward your voice.
Yeah, totally.
And so the ability for a room that has a, I mean, we've got a lot of high charge leaders in that room.
We do.
To be able to have humility towards each other, to submit to each other, to actually listen, and then fight for unity and agreement. Because I know whenever we leave that room, I am one where it's like, I have to have conversations with guys after the meeting to go, hey, I love you. I pressed, but I love you.
Yeah.
And that has built the bonds stronger.
Absolutely, it has.
But I think
that requires humility on both ends.
Yes, it does. And so the benefit of that room, knowing we are committed to each other before the Lord, we're committed to govern this church, and we are going to weather each season without a hurried heart.
Yeah.
Those have been things I've been very grateful for.
Yeah.
That's helped us in a lot of points where it's like, this is blown up. How are we going to handle this? Instead of thinking we're going to nail it tonight, it's we're going to walk forward with each other, take the time it takes, and do it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. For every time I've been in a meeting where you feel stuck at 10:30 and ready to go home and kiss the wife goodnight, but I find myself grateful for the perspective that's in the room. I only got my two eyeballs, so I can only come at something from this angle. So kind of working around a problem, it does take time. But like you say, I'm so glad for the fruit of good decision-making.
Yeah.
I also think there's an element of power to it.
Yeah.
You know, got a lot of first responders in our community, but they know better than anybody when crisis hit. You mentioned crisis. When crisis hits, you don't rise to the level of your aspirations. You fall to the base level of your training.
Yeah.
So you need men that you know are walking in the Spirit, seeking to discern the will of God. Finding collaborative consolations between us.
Yeah.
And they're not going to kind of nuke up their life. You need that because that disperses power. You need the power of the room. You need godly spiritual leaders because to be at the front of the room, to be at the front of a congregation invites the stiffest resistance from the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have one, as real as you and me.
Yeah.
He's coming after us. So to be kind of to be a spiritual leader in a congregation, you are inviting the resistance from the enemy. And man, I see a book on your shelf back there that I love. The language is a little crude, but Gates of Fire, man, it's on my Mount Rushmore,
yeah.
But Shield to Shield.
Right.
And I think about that because of the resistance that comes at us, whether it be warfare or other distractions, temptations that all come at us. But Shield to Shield's a mantra. Mm-hmm. That we have, and the shield is symbolic of the unit, which protects the flourishing of a community that exists behind the unit.
Yeah.
But the symbol of the shield stands for kind of like this military tactic. It's kind of like an overlapping shield wall called the phalanx. So my shield, I hold it in my left arm. I carry my spear in my right arm, and I'm kind of stabbing at the enemy over the top of my shield. My shield doesn't exist for my benefit. And this kind of arrangement exists for yours,
yeah.
Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Yours would exist for Mason's, and Mason's, I'm on his left, so it would exist for me. And so military leaders in ancient Sparta, they would kind of like excuse without penalty the man who would lose his helmet or misplace his spear. Why? Because those existed for the protection of the individual.
Yeah.
But if you were so much as caught with your shield upside down, you would invite the stiffest penalty from your leader and potentially even lose your citizenship because it protected the unit. So shield to shield, the power of the unit. I think of like, you guys know I'm kind of nerdy with words, but like I kind of like etymology, but the word community, first the prefix is co, which means a withness. And then munity, the root there is munis, which means fortification. Y'all fact check me on this. I'm a novice, kind of DIY words.
It's going on the internet, bro. They'll fact check you.
Sure. but it's a fortification in the withness. There's a power to the plural. And I think that's significant because we are, we get a little extra dose of the enemy's arrows.
Yeah.
I believe that.
I think that shield to shield mentality is a blessing for longevity in the job.
Mm-hmm.
To know like you're not having to take every hit by yourself.
Yeah.
You're not open to every criticism by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've gone to Nick several times where it's like, hey, this is, I received this today. And he's been able to look at me with an honest eye and be like, no.
Yeah.
Or I'm with you in it. Let's go forward.
Yeah.
And every elder has done that for each other.
Yeah.
And so there's a sense of a withness, of a strength in numbers there, but also of a solidarity of going, and I know that every man is pursuing Christ.
Yes.
Will have direct conversation with me, will address me on my error, and then call me forward.
Yeah.
And the room brings that kind of gifting in leadership that we all make each other better.
Yeah.
And that is a gift to our church. And so the extra things that we've done around the team building aspect of our room has been such a gift to strengthen that plurality. So it's not plurality in name only.
Yeah,
that's right.
Which I've been a part of, and it's not awesome.
That's the worst. I think it's the worst kind.
And it's not awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the tyrannical benefactor kind of idea. Yeah, I think where I've enjoyed, when people ask me, you know, I've been in ministry almost 30 years, been at the Village coming up on 23 or 24 years. When people ask me about longevity, I'll almost always point to that room and just going, for every kind of crisis we've been in, I've never felt like I've got to carry this. Now, I might be like taking publicly more of the hits, but I've never felt like I'm the only one having to carry this. Yeah. And then when we win, you know, it's fun to just think how well the team worked together.
Oh yeah.
And so it's like, there's this increase in joy in the highs and this burden sharing in the lows with a shared mix of gifts that it takes a little while to kind of fit those pieces together. And so there's certainly times where, like, we've got two new guys in the room right now that they're trying to figure out, okay, how do my gifts fit with these gifts? If he's got these pronounced ones here and mine might not be as pronounced, do I kind of make space for that and use these other gifts that I have in this? So there is a bit of it's more art than science as the board comes together. But that my experience has been, I owe my longevity and current joy in the work to a group of men who are serious about the Lord, serious about the Word of God, want to see people come to know Jesus and then grow into mature disciples and willing to fight for it, sacrifice for it, take big risks in it, surrender to, I think of, you know, when we rolled off campuses and we're like, hey, we just feel like the Holy Spirit's asking us to give away $60 million worth of, you know, real estate and cash and become the fastest shrinking church in America. Like, who does that? Well, our elders prayed it in and out and through and then executed on it. And I'm just like, this is an example of going, these men aren't interested in building the brand of the Village Church. They're serious about the kingdom of God. So they're not working or positioning for our brand. They're serious about the kingdom. And man, that's fun to do ministry alongside guys like that. If somebody's watching this, they're a young guy, they're planting a church, or maybe their ecclesiology, their governance is different than this, and they're thinking about moving towards elders, and what are ways that you would say, this is how you identify an elder? Because here's the scary thing. Elders are easy to get and near impossible to get rid of if you choose poorly. Yep. And I know many a guy who's no longer in ministry because they put the wealthy guy on the board, or they, you know, put the guy with the personality on the board. Or so how do you select elders if you're moving in that direction or you're planting a church?
Well, we touched on a little bit earlier. I mean, 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, they give you some boxes to check when it comes to characteristics of the type of man you're looking for. And I would say to that, yes and amen, follow those to the letter. And it's easier said than done. It is art more than it's science. Number one, and this is, I think, what we touched on earlier, is you gotta have a humility that kind of undergirds all of them.
Yeah.
And Matt, I say this behind your back all the time, so I might as well say it to your face in front of your viewers and listeners. But it works here because you embody it.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
The way you steward your voice in the room, in every leadership room I'm in with you, is rare. It's refreshing. And I would say it's a sacred responsibility, mm-hmm. Because there is this principle in the scriptures, and it's like the first among equals. So there is a plural pattern. I don't think the scriptures elevate one to the other. That's Jesus. We're under shepherds.
Yep.
So James 5, Acts 20, 1 Peter 5, it's elders, plural, and it's not like a singular one and then like a group of country club board members, yeah. good old boy club. That's not in the scriptures. But you're the way you steward your voice, you're often the last to go with your opinion. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to like times of sharing or vulnerability, you lead in that. Yeah. Because you're so wise with it, you know that if you lead with your opinion, you will shut down the perspective that's so valuable and necessary to make a good call, mm-hmm. a good decision. So it works because you are humble.
Well, thank you.
And that's the characteristic that I would say that would kind of undergird all of them. You know, it's Paul says it this way in Philippians, is like, have the same mind as Christ, you know, who had equality with God, but didn't count that as something to aspire to. In other words, he didn't stretch himself out to go get that. Rather, he condescended, he went low, he humbled himself. 1 Peter 5 would say the same thing. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, and at the proper time, he will exalt you. Mm-hmm. So many guys stretch themselves out for the exaltation, and they will not do the work necessary to go low, and to kind of, so to speak, invert the hierarchical pyramid and let the weight of the responsibility rest on the fewest people. Yeah. Praise God that Jesus is the undergirding force. When you think about going low, he's like the joists of a house. Mm-hmm. We sit on him. That's Matthew 7, build your house on the rock. The foundation, put these things into practice. That's Christ. We're under shepherds, so we sit just a little bit below his authority. But yeah, to invert the pyramid is hard. Because the responsibility is really heavy, and it lies on the fewest men. Yeah. But humility makes it, it's the engine that drives that car.
It's good.
And we've said, I think it's our Nymex brothers that talk about, like, you don't make an elder.
Yeah.
You just recognize them.
That's right.
And so if you are in a spot where you're getting started and you're thinking, I want this, how do I do this? Who do I pick? I would think about what it is to get to know men that you can see the pattern of their life and think, that's worthy of emulation. Mm-hmm. That's text-based. I see that. But I wouldn't quickly move to go, hey, you want to be an elder?
Yeah.
Like, I would spend a prolonged season of relationship building, getting to know them, maybe even studying the qualifications and then walking through something around the care of the church, seeing how they respond and having that kind of discussion with them.
Yeah.
Text says, man, this is a worthy thing to aspire to. You should aspire to mm-hmm. it. I talked about it in Bible study this spring of, like, if you're looking for the pattern of your life that you should build towards, use this list.
Yeah.
And so you recognize them, see who's doing that work free of the title.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good heart check.
Yeah.
Because if you just put the title in front of someone, they might think, oh, this is just like my corporate job.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, it's different.
It's very different.
And we can't just import those values here. And so I would just encourage you, watch the pattern of their life. You spend a prolonged amount of time with them.
Yeah.
Not forever.
Yeah.
But enough where you're like, okay, we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
When we talk about these definitions.
It's true.
Yeah. So the two things we're highlighting here is pace.
Yeah.
Don't be in a hurry to get elders.
Yep. Yeah.
And so even some guys out there ask me about external boards and all that kind of thing. I'm pro external board until you find these guys. Yeah. But then once you find these guys, they need to have proximity into yep. your life and into yep. the life of the church. Men, let me start by talking to you. We are called to lead and to love and to serve our wives, our kids, in our churches. And the reality is that we are in a battle, and one of the most subversive, awful weapons that the enemy has formed against us, it is the weapon of pornography. Maybe you're hearing me say these things and you're not a man at all. You're a woman. And the data is showing that women are struggling more and more with pornography. Also, this is one of those attacks that no longer is seen male or female, old or young. We will not drift towards holiness. We must fight for it. Too much is at stake. If you go to covenanteyes.com, you can use the promo code Overcomers, and that gets you 30 free days to put this on your phone, to put this on your computer, to put this on your devices, that you might see the help that God has given you in these days against this weapon for the good of your own soul, the good of your family, the good of your community, and the good of your church. Visit covenanteyes.com/overcomers. And so I think pacing matters. And then I love who's already eldering.
Yeah.
And maybe this would encourage you. The village process is close to 2 years before a guy's put in front of our people. And we're saying in that moment, we've done all the due diligence we can. Mm. If you know of a reason that this brother's not qualified for this, let us know.
Yeah.
And we have done almost, you know, a year's worth of work and done that. And had light shine in a dark corner that our best efforts didn't reveal. And that guy had to get out of the process. But speaking of pace, we're not just saying you should go slow. Like the two guys that are just in the room, but not yet elders. Yeah. I mean, we've been talking with them, meeting with them, meeting with their spouses, looking at the ministry they've been a part of, seeing how they serve in the church for over a year. And now they're going to be in the room with us for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll put them in front of everybody else. So this isn't just kind of like pie in the sky stuff. This is like, no. We're serious about this. And the way we've gotten to enjoy the benefits of plurality without maybe all the back edge that can come with it.
Yeah.
And I would say 23 years at TBC, we've never had like an elder coup or a subset of elders kind of try to subversively undermine, you know, pastors or visions or the initiatives. And I think part of that, well, one, I want to give all credit to the grace of God on that. I don't want to touch it, but I think spending that kind of time, like, which is hard on the guy and his wife to be in the process that long, that has paid dividends, that is the 23 years of, internal peace, you know, not external. We've been through some wars together. Yeah. And those brothers have just pressed more into the Lord and supported and encouraged us or disciplined us when necessary. And it's been a beautiful, I think a beautiful picture, but it's that pacing and the who's already doing this, not who can I disciple into this.
Because by the time you put them on our end, by the time you put them through that process, these men are known by the church.
Yeah.
So we're not putting a guy up that they're like, who is this? They have been eldering, they have been shepherding, they've been doing the work. I think when we brought Landon in and almost the entire church erupted.
Yeah.
Of like, he's been doing all of this.
Yeah. Been serving everywhere.
Yes. And it's like, this is what it is. Yeah. He should be in this office. And I think it's such an affirmation on that role.
Yeah.
When the church can say, yeah, he's one of our shepherds. Yeah. Submission is all the better.
Mm-hmm.
Trust is there. It's what you want.
We're in this season of history where all institutions, the church has not escaped it. There's a real concern about authority and how it's wielded. And there's a ton of people out there that have been significantly wounded by the church. And what I mean by that, so I can be clear, is not just, oh, another member of the church you were at sinned against you. I mean, the way a church operated towards you created a lot of harm and hurt in your heart. I think regardless of governance, that can happen unintentionally. And then I think there are sometimes the power dynamics at play actually create and cause the hurt. How might plurality help with like the kind of church hurt that is not like I was in a small group that went bad, but no, the leadership of the church operated in a way that was non-biblical and maybe even evil. How could plurality help with those kinds of stories that are all too familiar to us as pastors, as people come to the village, maybe to try to heal And I know we've caused hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember a season where we had 50 meetings one month because God painfully made us aware that we had sinned against people, and we set up all those meetings and tried to own that by the grace of God. But hopefully by His grace now, that's happening less and less. And I think plurality in some ways has helped with that.
I can think of my own experience of thinking through how to hold brothers in check and then how to speak up when something's not right.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple instances where I had to make the call of like, for the sake of plurality and for the bride, we have to have this conversation, which is means the other side of this door is difficult. But it is not being beholden to personality or power and saying, no, the most true thing about us is that what we're being charged with.
Yeah.
And we steward that responsibility. And so I think plurality really is a safeguard against those abuses of personality or power or authority, so that there would be a fought for clarity and brotherhood.
Yeah.
Where I know you are for me on my darkest day.
Yeah.
And when I am not myself, you will address me and call me back to Christ. And even if it's like the room is that way and something has happened, the brothers know like the main call is we are called to the Lord.
Yeah.
Therefore, I will speak against my brother and call him back, and we won't let things move forward. That is a gift and a safeguard that I think the room brings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. First allegiance is to Jesus. And so if that's true, then there's a collective integrity that can be trusted outside of the room. So you're not resting again on one person's integrity, which ebbs and flows with days and nights. But there's a collective integrity that can be trusted. And I'll say this, like I'm making the presumption again that it's actually true plurality and not some kind of facade.
Yep.
If it's a facade, I'm sorry. If it's fake plurality, I apologize to all the people that have been wounded as a result of that kind of tyrannical leadership. That's atrocious. It's unbiblical.
Yeah.
And, that's why this conversation is important to have. But when you have actual leadership, you can trust, that the conversations have been had, that, when someone has a check in their spirit, that they voice it. I'm thinking of one specific circumstance. We have 11 guys in our elder room. We were 10 for 10 yeses. We weren't like calling the vote. But we were just kind of going around. Hey, where do you stand, Matt? Mace, where are you at, Nick? We're like, yeah, I feel good. Let's go. This is biblical. This is right. This is good. This is true. And we get to number 11, who's probably the most reserved, probably why he's going last. He said, man, I don't feel right about that. And we scrapped it. And it was a 10:30 meeting. We all left frustrated because we didn't get to that checkbox on the agenda didn't get done, but the result of the decision is much better because he voiced the check in his spirit. We didn't have unity. We didn't have what I would say common understanding. You're not going for consensus, to your point. If everybody agrees, you don't have unity at all. But if you have common understanding, then you can trust that we kind of pushed, we pulled, we stretched the decision out. We looked at it from the front and the back. We kind of walked around the problem. And I think that is an integrous room. It's a whole room and it's a trustworthy room.
Yeah, it's true plurality is concerned with the truth, understands that this is Jesus's church. It's not ours, it's His. And then it wants to fight against false unity. And that I have found, it's not for us anymore, but I have found that to be like really rare because it's really awkward to be the guy in the room that's like, hey, on a scale of 1 to 5, I'm a 2 on this.
That's right.
And everybody else is like throwing up a 5.
It's a vulnerable spot to be.
And I just let me explain why. I'm not trying to derail us. I'm not trying to, man, I remember like first kind of public scandal we were caught in. Man, we had misstepped. It wasn't some other public scandals. Like we weren't guilty. This one we were, and we had sinned against people. And I remember we had lawyers that were like, man, if you own this, you could get sued this many times and it might be the end of the village church. And I remember going into that meeting wondering, well, I knew in my heart, it's got to go this way. Like it's got to go this way. And the other two LPs at the time were in that same spot. It's got to go this way. And we get into the room, and it was fun to watch the elders just go, man, if we screwed this up and this is the end of the Village Church, better to put our heads on the pillow, knowing that we pleased the Lord and did right by people we sinned against, than to protect this thing.
Yes.
And that for me, that moment for me, was when I knew that we had achieved what we set out to achieve, which was true plurality. Yeah. They weren't worried about protecting me, but they loved me. They weren't worried about protecting the brand or the organization. They wanted, as best we could, reconciliation with people we sinned against and to own that sin to them. Not in a way that was like, yeah, but no, we failed you.
Yes.
Please forgive us. And then to put that in their court as a, no, we see now. We couldn't see then, we see now, please forgive us. And then for that room to make that decision at kind of an apex for us, where like we were a big brand, we were a church everybody kind of starting to learn about. And to me, what I love about the Village Church now was born back in 2015 when we could have decided we're going to be the kind of church that hides things. Mm-hmm. We're going to be the kind of church that blames and plays misdirection. Mm-hmm. And in 2015, we said, no. We're going to try to be a church of integrity as best we know with where we are. We're going to be honest with our people. We're going to be honest with our members. And we're going to own that we've sinned against some people, and we're going to try to make that right. And that, to me, was when I first started going, okay, we're not perfect.
Yeah.
That's an unachievable goal, but it's one to be striven. You know, it's the old Lexus ad, the relentless pursuit of perfection. Mm-hmm. I mean, too many humans in the elder room to hit that. But that was probably one of my more proud moments of us, where you had legal advice to not do what we felt like the Bible commanded us to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I stood up on Sunday morning for the elders and just said, hey, we sinned against people and we failed you. This is what the Bible calls us to, and we fell short. Yeah. We're going to try to make that right.
And that's how you can tell. I mean, I think that's the best indicator that collective integrity in a room exists, is when you'll go out of the room and a mistake is made, and you can come outside of the room and say, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's how you know that it's real and not some facade that'll be susceptible to sweeping things under rugs.
Mason, I'd love to hear just a little bit from you. You have been in, and I just don't know as well, Nick. You have been in rooms where there was fake plurality.
Yeah.
And then have been in our room where you're saying, no, it is true plurality. Talk a little bit about kind of your experience in a room where it looks like plurality, but it's not really, that's not really what it is. And a little bit about your experience here with us. What's funny is they were both with us, but
just different.
Different. Yeah. Yeah.
What I've noticed about our room, and why I'm so thankful for the health of our room, is we talk to each other, not about each other.
That's a good word.
And we don't whip up votes outside of our room.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is I'm not leaving the elder room and going to other elders, trying to get them on my side to come back into the room to present a case. I have been in that meeting.
Yeah.
I won't be in that meeting or participate in that again. And so to feel like I have felt like I have been in rooms shadow boxing, knowing that I've heard that conversation from one person.
Yeah.
And it appears in someone else's mouth.
Yeah.
And so I know that we're not playing a fair, we're not all on the same team.
Yeah.
And so we're not coming at it from the same way. We're not dealing with each other directly. I don't play that way. And so knowing our room is fighting to talk to each other, have one conversation, bring it all into the room, it's a much healthier experience.
Yeah.
We can fall to really unhealthy. It is easy to fall to really unhealthy and pragmatic levels of communication and triangulation.
Yeah.
Where it feels like, oh, I'm just going to take this offline.
Yeah.
No, we have a shared responsibility. So we will bring it in and slow down to have the conversation.
Yeah.
That's a much healthier experience. And I think one that stewards the responsibility we have better.
Yeah. I think long game, it's certainly the healthier route. What would you say to, I know there are guys out there, they're going to watch this. They're already in a kind of more of a hierarchical model or a founder model who are going to want to start moving in this direction, but maybe aren't quite sure what's the first step for us. Maybe it's somebody on a board that's, you know, in a hierarchical or founder model. What are some of the first steps that you can make wanting to move more and more towards plurality and away from that kind of model?
The church I grew up in moved to elders probably 8 or 9 years ago. And I remember I sat on a panel and I was brought in as the plurality ecclesiology guy. And sitting next to me is a professor from a local seminary.
Yeah.
And we're just talking through it, having a dialogue. But it was an open house meeting for members of the church. And they knew me as the kid that grew up there.
Yeah.
And I'm now talking about, hey, here's a model that we're practicing. And they held those meetings, they held perspective. The deacons actually said, we think this is the way we should go.
Yeah.
And it took the solo elder lead pastor also getting to a point going, okay.
Yeah.
Because it's a big change for him.
Yeah.
And then they began to find who those men were and put them in place. I think that is a very difficult move.
Yeah.
I think from a church member's expectations to the staff's expectations to the lead pastor's posture, and then what he is then inviting in where he's had so much power.
All those things
matter. I think all that is super difficult, and I think it's all right and good.
Yeah.
But I would say that beginning to have those conversations and helping people understand and get perspective on what it is and what it isn't, and then showing the beautiful picture of what true plurality is.
Yeah.
And that it is something you are continually fighting for.
Yeah.
And then you invite the church to say, this is better.
Yeah.
In so many different ways. So that might be a preaching series about it. It might be informative discussions, however you tackle that with your people, but it's helping them ask enough questions and get real answers around it. And I think that's really important.
For sure.
Yeah. I think, you know, again, Paul, when he's talking about here's the kind of guys you're looking for, it goes back to military language.
Yeah.
He said, a good soldier doesn't get entangled in civilian pursuits. So in other words, he doesn't weave in small things into his life. And many guys, a lot of guys I see, they're not so much bent to the sinful as they are bent to the small. So they'll give their time to scrolling and not devoting themselves again to the ministry of the word and prayer. So you got to find those guys.
Yeah.
Those are the guys you're looking for. So I'd add a thing to your list. I think it can be relationally hard because if this is not already in place, you're probably going to go to your circle, you know, and just get your crew to come in. But if those are not the kind of guys that Paul would say, these are the good soldiers, those are not the kind of guys you need in your room. And it can be relationally difficult.
Yep.
So play the long game. Like you say, Matt, play the long game. Jesus is the prize. Keep your eyes on him and find the guys who would be good soldiers and trust that the church is going to be better served because you didn't just pick your friends.
Yeah.
And I would say, especially if you're the primary leader or the founder, like you're going to have to, well, let me say what I'm not saying. Plurality doesn't mean that you're not God's guy for that church, that the vision he gives you and the things that he puts in his heart are now like that you don't do that anymore. I don't think that's what plurality is. I think that's the role you play in plurality. What I would encourage you in is you need to believe that this is better for you and it's better for the church. So it protects you and it protects the church. And ultimately, you'll have your pride checked repeatedly. And I have just found that that's helpful to me as I seek to stay low before the Lord. Like one of the ways that the Lord continually does that is, man, I'm going to submit to these brothers because I see biblically that they're for my good and they're for the church's good. And the church probably needs to be protected from some of my wildness. Now, there's some parts about the wildness of who I am that the church needs, but not all of it and not all the time. And so the elders are a great kind of, I think I used the word break earlier. I don't know if that's the best illustration, but they're maybe a filter committed to pray with me and for me about, is this the direction the Lord's leading us? Thank you, Matt. Let's pray into that with you. Man, can you help us understand this? Or what have you thought about that? And so now I've got this unit I'm on, rather than being just kind of this one man, one man soldier out surrounded by enemies. I've got brothers in arms, and I think it's impossible if you love that everybody jumps when you speak. I think it's impossible if you have not healed in a way that you don't understand that God has always chosen to do things through a man and the men he's put around that man. So it's not David alone, right? It's David and it's Joab and it's Nathan and it's Jonathan. And when those pieces aren't there, it gets messy. And it's not Moses alone. It's Moses and Aaron. And then it's the judges that he puts in place around him, the elders he puts in place around him. And so there has to be something in you that goes, I biblically believe that this is better for me and the church, even though I'm saying it's not as pragmatic and it's going to slow things down, but the quality of what we do actually is better when all said and done. So I do think that it's kind of a no-go if you don't want it, you don't think it's better, you don't. So you're not going to move in this direction, and there's going to be quite a bit of conflict if there's a gap between the people of the church who go, we think this is biblical, and the leader who's like, well, I maybe, but I also see God works through men. And I'm going, yeah, we're not disagreeing with that. We're even saying, no, we believe that. But we also are saying for the good of the bride and the good of the man, plurality is the gift. And so if you want to read more about this, I think Bob Thune's book is excellent on plurality, biblical eldership. I commend Strock to you, although I think Strock's system might not fit everywhere. There's a lot of freedom in what and how the elders work in a local congregation, but we're arguing more plurality of leadership with elders, not just for elders. And so last question. What encouragement would you guys give if there's a young church planner guy taking his first pastorate? Mm-hmm. What's some encouragement you would give that guy, like, to try to pursue shared leadership from the beginning?
Yeah, I would say I'd probably start with a fear. I'd start with, you know, everybody knows at this point it's on coffee cups and bumper stickers. It's a virtual platitude at this point, but leadership can be very, very lonely.
Yeah.
And there's a danger to the impairment of loneliness. So loneliness is kind of an emotion, which means to move without. It's not meant to stay within. So mm-hmm. an unprocessed emotion leads to an impairment of it, which is isolation. And if you isolate yourself because you're lonely in leadership and in ministry, just doing the thing every week, grinding it out, there will come a day when you will meet the wall and you will isolate yourself. And that is the danger.
Yeah.
Just going straight to the word, 1 Peter 5. You know, first of all, John 10, and Jesus leads the sheep out of the sheep pen. So there's a familiarity and a comfort. They get three square meals a day. They know where the shade tree is in that sheep pen, but they follow the good shepherd out of the sheep pen because they know his voice.
Yeah.
So if you find other men who know his voice and follow him, you'll be safe in the flock of the sheep. But the moment you start to isolate, mm-hmm. you'll find the roaring lion prowling to devour the one who isolates.
Yeah.
So I would say, man, just brother, I see you. Many of us have been there grinding it, doing your best to survive Sunday, day in and day out, coming up with a fresh word. But that can be a lonely lifestyle, and you were better off in a flock than you are isolated on the green hill for the enemy to devour your soul.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and I think that the congregation thrives on the joy of the pastor.
Yeah.
And if the pastor is lonely,
mm-hmm.
if the pastor is just beaten,
exhausted,
the pastor's first responsibility to his family doesn't get to thrive
yeah.
on the joy of his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's a young church planner or a guy in his first pastorate, if he's married, if he has small children, if he's thinking, I have to give my heart and soul to this place. That's his second responsibility.
Yeah.
And his wife needs the joy of his heart.
Yeah.
And his children need him to be vibrant and alive.
Mm-hmm.
And elders will help buoy his heart.
That's right.
And it will help relieve some of the burden. It will help relieve the press and the stress and pressure. Because I bet that guy could be type A, perfectionistic,
yeah,
and has so many ideals on him that he won't let himself rest.
Yeah.
And he would be well served by brothers who would help unload his backpack for him.
Yeah.
And then call him forward.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a healthy fear of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a healthy, like, the thought I had had was just give right power away,
yeah,
in measured doses.
Yep.
So you're trusting people with it. You're walking closely with them. But you're, even from the beginning, practicing that humility,
yeah,
of delegating and equipping. So you're not getting used to the muscle, the reflex of like, I have to do it. It's no, Christ will build his church.
Yeah.
I will entrust this to right faithful men and we can move forward together.
That's right. The shadow of loneliness is the isolation we talked about,
yeah,
to your point, but the gift of it is connection.
Yeah.
Like when you sense the loneliness in your soul, man, it moves you to the gift of connection with God, self, and others. So it is just better to do it with other brothers.
Yeah. No question. No question. Well, thank you for, man, tuning in to this episode of The Overcomers. We love the Church of Jesus Christ. We love his people. This conversation is in the hope of serving that end. So whether you're a pastor, my hope is that you would be flanked by brothers who have your back, but see Christ as King and not you as Savior. And then, man, if you're part of a local church, I want you to be shepherded and cared for deeply and well by men who fear the Lord, love his word, and walk according to the Spirit. So God bless you. Pray that this was helpful. Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The Overcomers. I just pray your heart is always encouraged in the Lord. Really, the ministry I feel God's called me to in this season is to be one that's encouraging you, telling you the Lord sees you, reminding you of the opportunities that we have as the people of God in this day. And so the Overcomers podcast is one of the ways I do that. Another way is that I'm sending out a monthly newsletter. And in that, I've got a little audio link for kind of things I'm thinking about and wrestling through that I'm not necessarily preaching on. And so in the show notes is a link where you can go and sign up for that monthly email. And so, man, if The Overcomers is encouraging you, I would encourage you then to click on that link, sign up for the newsletter. And it's a way for me to further encourage you as you seek to live as overcomers in this current moment.